Well, I've been on a 12-year nonstop world tour, so about 250 to 300 days a year I've been on the road steady for 12 years. So we just never stop. Whereas a rock band might do, you know, a tour for 9 months or a year and then take a year off or two to make it. I just have not stopped in 12 years. So we are just finishing up this week a 56-show run in New York City. And then we have a couple of days to, or one day to get on a plane and fly to the Republic of Georgia and Istanbul and out to San Francisco and Oregon and then back to the Asia. I mean, it's just not, it's really, really nonstop. And I'm a super fortunate guy to be able to be in that position in the music business.
Do you have a favorite place to perform? Are you looking forward to performing in any place in particular?
To be honest with you, you know, we love playing the Blue Note here in New York. I mean, because our friends can all come down, and it's a real fun thing when you're doing 56 shows. But I mean, to be honest with you, you can have a great night at the Hollywood Bowl, and you can have a not great night. It's just like, you know, it's more indicative, I think, not necessarily of the place, or probably more calculated on, you know, how the audience reacts or what kind of mood the band is in and how we're all playing and feeling that night. And that's what makes the really great night special. And it is a crapshoot in many ways.
So jumping forward in time a little bit, this August you'll be playing at SPAC with violinist Joshua Bell, and I understand that you two go back a ways. So I wonder if you could just sort of give me a little history lesson about how you two met and when you started playing together.
Well, we met each other through, I mean, to be honest with you, I was in School of Music. He's about 4 years younger than me, and I was at the School of Music in Bloomington, Indiana, and Joshua was probably already fairly much spoken in violin circles as the next prodigy, the next great. You know, he was probably like 15 when I met him, 16, and he drove into the School of Music in a brand new Porsche, and I was like, wow, this guy's doing pretty good. And we've had some mutual friends along the way, but it's been, you know, it's a fast forward many, many years where our careers actually were way more solidified, and we both record for Columbia Records. Sony, Columbia Records, and so it's later, much, much later in life that we actually became a little more friendly and would hang out, and I did a song on his record with him, and we've done a couple of things together. So, when I first knew him at Indiana University, I was in the jazz circles and he was in the classical music circles, but we did meet and have a couple mutual friends.
Do you have a favorite piece that you like to perform?
To be honest with you, it really matters how my trumpet chops are feeling that day. I mean, I love playing Emmanuel and a couple other things, but if the trumpet's a very unforgiving instrument, and if it's being a little bit moody that day, then it's not as much fun. Then I like playing the more of the jazzier stuff, just because it's so much more freeing in a lot of ways.
So your records, they go everything from, you know, jazz standards up to your own pieces and your own works and all kinds of different musical styles. You have jazz music, you have pop music. When you're on the road, how do you settle on what you're going to perform? Do you sort of just stick to the program, or does it really depend on how you're feeling that day?
No, because we work so much, it's just always like a slow-moving iceberg. You know, like we might shift a couple of things in and out, but once we're playing something, it could be radically different from one night to another because of you have like world-class musicians and they're just kind of given a lot of freedom. I will say, and then the most paramount thing for probably the success for my career in the last 10 years is my live show is completely 180% different than my albums. You know, I really believe that when you make an instrumental record, you want to make it's so that the audience is kind of put in one place and they can just kind of drift off or listen to it around the house or while they're driving or something that's emotional and stuff like that. But when you're doing a show, there needs to be much, much more like a roller coaster, much more virtuosic, much more exciting, much more fun when you need to be. And I'm an artist that can tour around the world everywhere, and I've never had a hit record. So I don't have any song that guy plays that song. It really has been basically word of mouth going from city to city to city and everyone going like, oh my God, I had no idea it was going to be like that. We thought it was just going to be you playing the stuff from your record. But it isn't that. It's world-class musicians all kind of given freedom, and over time it's snowballed into this almost like a tastemaker for musicians and for people to come see, you know, who a great drummer is, who great singers are, et cetera, from the band.
To you, how important is being accessible to the listener? I know later this year when you're at SPAC, one of the great things about that venue is anyone can get a lawn ticket and go see a world-class musician. So is accessibility important to you?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, and first of all, I played that venue many, many times and many times with other musicians before my solo career really hit. So I know it well, and it's such a fun venue in the summer and, hanging out backstage and all the musicians and the jazz festivals and blah, blah, blah. It's been really, really great, and so I have fond memories of playing there, and you're right, it is one place, L.A. has the Hollywood Bowl. I mean, it's like one place that there's always going to be good music going on there.